can get started. There's four of you, so that constitutes a quorum for the committee. We can just get started. I will just do a quick roll call, just shout out if you're here. So I believe Sherry Gothard-Barron is here.
Here.
Donnie Van Ryswick?
Here.
Amy Granberry?
Here.
Jimmy Carmichael?
Here.
And then absent, I believe, is Kenneth Darden, Nick Doster, and Mark Wyatt. So we can proceed now. We do have a quorum, four out of seven. So the first order of business, as usual, is just approval of the previous meeting's minutes. So I sent out the May 6th conference call minutes. Does anyone have any changes or additions to those?
No, I don't.
No.
All right. Hearing none, does someone want to make a motion to approve?
So moved.
All right. Seconded?
Second.
All right. All those in favor of passing the minutes as they are?
Aye.
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 Okay. Good. So the minutes are passed. And just to go over, since I know that Jimmy and Sherry weren't able to make the previous the conference call, I'm just going to quickly discuss what we have run through and what we're looking to do this week. So at our previous conference call, we went over the Chapter 8 of the biennial plan that was drafted based on feedback made sure that we had everything included. And at the conference call, we got a lot of good additional feedback from the committee as to what should be tweaked and what should be added. And there were two main recommendations that were added. One concerning using the council's website for providers and other state agencies to go to as kind of a place for finding the informational resources and templates for the creation of informational resources to pass on to consumers. So that was one recommendation that was added to Chapter 8. And then a second recommendation that was added was to create some type of housing specialist training and certification that mirrors the benefits counseling training that's currently in place. And so those were, I think, the two main ideas that were incorporated into this revised draft of Chapter 8 that I sent everyone yesterday. Also, at the April 22nd committee conference call, we discussed Chapter 5 of the plan, which is identifying barriers, and talked specifically about coordination barriers. That Chapter 5 has been completed, and my supervisor is taking a look at it to make some edits before it goes out to the entire council, since both committees worked on this chapter. So I'll send it out as soon as my supervisor is ready or is done reviewing it. Additionally, I wrote some of the introductory pieces to the plan. So there's a background chapter that explains all of what this council's activities have been so far and how the council is basically organized, structured, those things. So there's a background chapter that has been created, and there's also a chapter on basically a needs assessment that's been created. And as soon as I get the go-ahead from my supervisor, Elizabeth, I'm going to send that out to the entire council, since those are basically chapters that set the foundation of the rest of the plan to say, you know, here's what the need is that exists for these communities, these special needs populations, and here is how the council has gone about conducting their business in order to create a plan to meet those needs. So I will definitely be sending those out to you for comments and critique as soon as my supervisor gives me the go-ahead. So that's kind of what's been going on. And at the previous May 6th conference call, there was the suggestion to use this conference call as a time to talk about Chapter 7 of the plan, which is the cross-education of state agencies, so state agency to state agency. And I think that Nick Doster made a good point that we need to really make sure that this chapter sets us up for the next chapter, so that the recommendations that were made in Chapter 8 about state to local and local to consumer have a good foundation. And just to read to you, Nick couldn't be here, but he did submit some comments to me of his own thoughts on this chapter. So I'll read you what he said, and then we can start with the general discussion. So he said, what I haven't figured out yet is how to operationalize communication. Although the council itself serves some of that function by requiring various agencies to communicate regularly, there's still a need to figure out how to operationalize. He says that clearinghouses and websites are helpful, but he doesn't think they do all of the work. And he thought maybe it would be good to figure out how the frontline staff of each state agency, how we ensure that they are trained to make referrals, and also not to look just at eligibility staff, but also contracting staff in terms of their in terms of making sure they have the proper information and education. So I think that those were, you know, his recommendations for this chapter, and we can either start there, or we can start with a discussion handout that I sent out to everyone. We can just start there. So one of the things he said was, you know, making sure that our frontline staff, that they are the ones that have, I guess, good agency-to-agency understanding and knowledge to then move forward with conducting their business that they conduct, which is to communicate directly with either local providers or consumers. I think that is something that we've brought up in the past, and I want to know what kind of recommendations we have for how to effectively make sure that those frontline staff within the state agencies are properly educated and trained about other state agency programs. Thoughts? When you say frontline staff in the state agencies, like who would that be, or what level of staff would that be at TDHCA, for instance? Well, so TDHCA has the Housing Resource Center, which I am a part of,
mm-hmm.
and we answer the public information line. So that can be both service providers, housing providers, as well as consumers that call that line and ask about, you know, what is available in their local area or how do they get connected to affordable housing resources. We also answer all the incoming, like, emails, letters, things like that. So I believe it would probably be the staff that has the most outside communication. I'm thinking that we have, like, TDHCA, we have our own database that's mm-hmm. set up that by geographic location can tell you exactly what affordable housing resources are available to you. But those are just housing. We don't have in this database what, you know, ADRC may be in your area, or what local, you know, services for persons who have a substance abuse disorder is in your area. We don't have that. Our database is purely affordable housing.
Right. Okay, so you're envisioning, like, TDHCA, it would be your, you know, that level, the Housing Resource Center. At the other agencies, do we have any idea what kind of staff it would be so that we know what kind of things need to go between them or?
That is a good question, because I know that for our Health and Human Service agencies, they do contract out, you know, working with people to do the like functional needs assessments and the eligibility assessments for people for certain services. So, you know, that's a good question because I do wonder how much, you know, the frontline staff for those agencies would actually be contracted out.
Right. Probably about half within the Department of Aging and Disability Services. There are, I think, about 1,500 field offices with case managers for the community care for the aged and disabled programs.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how many staff there are, but if I think of frontline workers, I think of the DADS workers who are assessing either older adults or younger folks with disabilities for in-home services, whether it's attendant care or home-delivered meals. So that's a pretty sizable population. There's also a huge population within HHSC for the Medicaid eligibility workers. And I'm not sure, you know, how much can reasonably be added to their plate. I know that the agency has been sued for failing to meet deadlines for processing food stamp applications. So, you know, there may not be a whole lot of give there, but so those are the state agency case managers, and then DADS also contracts out with mental retardation authorities for a lot of services for folks with intellectual disability, that contracts out with area agencies on aging for Older Americans Act programs. And then the Department of State Health Services would contract out with the mental health authorities for services to folks with behavioral health needs. And I'm not sure what the staffing profiles would look like for those MR authorities, the mental health authorities. With the area agencies on aging, there are 28 of us. And my guess is each of us will have maybe 3 to 6 frontline staff. So you're probably looking at no more than 150 within the AAAs, and probably quite a few more through the MHMR authorities. Their programs tend to be quite a bit bigger.
Well, see, I was thinking, I mean, all of us that contract with the Department of State Health Services have contract managers, fiscal contract managers, program specialists that we work with. You know, we've got 5 different people that we work on one contract with up there, and they're in Austin, and we're the private provider that do the services. So when we're talking about frontline, are we talking about those contract managers and
programs? No, I wouldn't think that contract managers would be considered frontline.
Well, can I stop you there, though? Because,
yeah.
I mean, maybe the language is something that we need to work on, because maybe it isn't frontline. But I do think that this chapter is meant for those who are working in the state agencies rather than the contracted workers at the local level.
And that was kind of what I was thinking. I thought this one specifically addressed the state agencies, so state employees versus private nonprofit or private for-profit providers that do the services.
Right.
That's more in the next chapter.
Right.
Okay.
So we can call them something different, but you know, it would have to be those workers that yeah, like are in the headquartered agency, or I mean, it could be the field offices of a state agency, but I don't think it would be the contracted organizations.
Okay.
So I guess you know, when we're thinking about the people in the headquarters needing to have some type of understanding and education of other state agencies, so that we're not working in silos and perhaps duplicating efforts, how do we go about, you know, what kind of recommendations do we want to look at? I know that the silo issue was was a big one that came up during our public forums as well as in previous discussions of this committee.
Mm-hmm. I know in the work I've done with health and human services agencies, the silo issue was huge. And it involved federal mandates as well as state mandates. If there can be a way to overcome the silos, all of our programs would work better.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess, you know, what, or do we have any, do you have any thoughts as to, you know, maybe things that have worked in the past or, you know, maybe are no longer in place, but interagency communication mechanisms?
I think that's been one of the real struggles for state agencies is that there hasn't been an effective way that this has been worked out. I mean, you may have some brave employees who, in spite of this, you know, silo issues, they've individually worked to overcome that.
Right.
But agencies as a whole, that has, I've never seen that happen.
So I don't have any wonderful ideas, but I mean, I think you even have to look at, you know, the Department of State Health Services has so many different things. And, you know, I'll talk to a program specialist on the substance abuse side, and we have to regularly make referrals to, you know, primary care, behavioral health, you know, those kind of things. And they don't even know all the programs within their agency. You know, so it's just a huge, there's just so many people, it's hard to get that communication through to everybody that needs it. And I don't have any brilliant ideas, sorry.
And I agree with you because I think that's also been something that while I've been trying to work on this council and get a lot of varying feedback from people in those agencies that come across the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean it's true that it really does depend on the size of the agency because, you know, as you all well know, DADS and DSHS are very large. TDHCA is definitely not that big. I mean, we have about 315, which is big, but it's not as big as the others. And then TSHAC is only about 10 to 12 staff. They're much smaller. So I think that it definitely depends on the size of the agency.
Sure. I think on the Department of State Health Services, it's like something like 15,000 employees or something.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's a whole different level.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess we can come back to that, but it is something that we, I mean, even if you want to throw out something that you've done with your own staff, as silly as it may sound, trying to try to go from, you know, kind of build that up from a smaller to a larger agency, it is something that you know, yes, maybe no one's taken a crack at it yet, but I think that's what this council's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, any ideas whatsoever.
But I think the different levels are important because as Nick and I talked one day, and I think Dennis was there, but like, that level can meet all you want, but then if the ones even above them, you know, it's got to get implemented from somewhere that's an authority to say, you know, we are going to all communicate, we are all going to work on these barriers. And so you've got to look at both levels. You've got to make sure the frontline people actually have the information, and then you've got to make sure that management supports that and that those barriers start to come down.
Yeah, I hear you're saying that, you know, from the top level, the management has to make it a priority.
Right.
I think also in with this is from an agency perspective, there needs to be some way legislatively that those barriers can be identified and removed. I say that strictly because with the ties that oftentimes go with funding mandates that come out from the state or even the federal level, unless those are opened up to allow collaboration, you're still going to keep running into this issue.
Right.
You know, this agency can't play with this agency because the funding streams don't allow them to.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think one of the things maybe, and it might be legislated at some point, Terry, would be, you know, so much of the money comes in from the feds and then gets a state level of regulations added on top of it. And if we could just stop doing that, that would eliminate some of those extra
concerns. Yeah. And that would help, definitely. You know, but anything that the state legislature can do, and, you know, it may be the agencies themselves that need to identify where these mandates are, and so that, you know, the legislature can come in and say, okay, these are where the barriers are at. This is what we can do to help alleviate that. But I really, really believe that it's going to have to come from the those decisions will have to be made at that level, strictly because the agency heads truly don't have the authority to make that decision.
Well, I think that maybe, you know, you are thinking very big picture as to, like, interagency partnerships and collaboration, and I think that maybe, and I think that that's a good, like, end goal. I think that maybe for the purposes of this first biennial plan, you know, we may be looking at what are ways that we can just talk to each other better. What are ways that we can just make sure that each agency is aware of programs that exist in other agencies. So I think that the collaboration and partnership aspect is definitely an end goal that may be farther down the line. And I understand that you're saying we would have to get there through a legislative action.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that the executive directors or commissioners of the agencies, what they can do right now, and they can do without legislative mandate, is to find a way to break down the barriers of communication. You know, simple communication.
Yeah,
that would be nice.
Do we have any thoughts about how we can do that? Like how we can make that communication, you know, how we can catalyze that or create an impetus for that?
Well, what about some kind of listserv that sends out, you know, program information? Because, you know, each one of us has our own. You know, I get one from specialized female programs. I get one from substance abuse. I get one from, but I have to be signed up on all of those. If we could have a centralized listserv that sent out information that would benefit a lot of different people at one time, you know, within those state agencies, that, you know, this is what's going on here, the highlights for the week or the month or whatever from each of the state agencies, that got distributed within the state agency and to the providers that contract with them.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. So kind of doing either a weekly or monthly sort of announcement, I think that's a good idea. I think that, you know, it's interesting because I think that TxDOT, which is, you know, gigantic, I think they do something like that. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah. I get four or five different ones, but it would be nice to have something in a central location, and I only get them from Department of State Health Services. If I got, you know, there may be something at DADS that would be good for our clients that I just don't know about.
So you think that maybe if there was, like a listserv, I mean, right now, for example, TDHCA has a listserv that goes out to its subrecipients and to consumers who are interested, and we have listserv administrators. There's three of us.
Uh-huh.
I am one of them, actually. And so maybe there could be, like, a listserv administrator per agency who sends out these updates, but sends them out with the intent of other state agencies seeing them and making sure that other state agencies are on the listserv.
Yeah, and I think beyond that, you know, rather than one everywhere, if there could be somebody designated to get it to one person, you know, so that it came in one listserv instead of multiple. I mean, when I miss a day, I may have 80 emails to open. So if some of those were consolidated into one email, it would be helpful.
Okay. That's a good idea. Good idea, I like that. Also, I mean, I think another thing that we talked about, another thing that was a previous conversation in this committee, is that staff turnover can be a big problem if it's a state employee who has been with the agency, has a lot of, you know, experience and expertise, but then once they leave, that's gone, and it causes there to be a gap in knowledge about other state agency programs once that one employee has left. And so I think that that's something that we've discussed before, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe there's some recommendations that this committee can come up with about how to institutionalize knowledge about each other, about state agency to state agency. I mean, do we have any thoughts, recommendations along those lines?
I mean, that's just something that we face in our own agency. So you get somebody and you lose that institutional knowledge, it's just difficult.
Yeah. I mean, there's things like standard operating procedures and things, you know, where you write down kind of the process of what you do on a daily basis, but is there a way of kind of doing the same thing, but more about how to know what the connections are between your agency and others, or who the people that are good communicators between those state agencies, or I don't know, something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, any thoughts on how to make sure that we don't allow staff turnover to, if we get so far and we make all this progress in breaking down these silos of communication, only to have loss of staff build them back up. I mean, what do we do?
You rely on the training materials.
Okay.
Well, I agree. There's got to be consistent training that goes across all the agencies, and it needs to be warehoused where everybody has access to it.
But I think even prior to that is you train multiple people whenever possible so that not just one person at each place or one part of a group has the information, which does require more buy-in. But.
Right. So I think that, I mean, and this is, I think, something that was mentioned back a while back during our first meeting, but that, you know, we recommended a training module for providers, and I think that we also wanted to recommend a similar training module for, that would be for state agency employees.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about that high level, just an overview kind of thing, so that they would know what's going on at the different agencies.
Are there any things we want to, you know, particularly highlight for this training module, or any differences that we need to make sure we mention between a model that would go towards a state agency and a model that would go towards a local provider?
I think if it's done right, it could be the same module, actually. I think for an overview, I think it could be used for either population.
And I kind of envision two different versions. I think all of this is about the consumer, so I think it would be good to have information that targets a professional audience and similar information that targets a consumer audience.
I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah, but if you're talking about the training for the state agencies and the providers, I think that one could be pretty similar with the different one for consumers. Then.
Right.
But that overview, so that we all know what everybody's doing, could be for staff, you know, agency or state staff.
Right.
Okay. So, and I know that there's another thing that's on the discussion handout that we had talked about previously about that perhaps we need to figure out the fragmentation within individual agencies, and I know that this was mentioned earlier. I guess you know there we can do a training that is like a training for that's from agency to agency, but do we also need to think about a training that just should be something that agencies should know about themselves?
Yeah.
Or, like, are there other things besides trainings that we can think of for, like, within one agency, how do we improve communication? Because I think that, you know, for local providers, that has to be, you know, one of the most frustrating things is, and I think that, you know, I totally see that that's something that should be addressed in this chapter, is not just state agency to state agency, but within the larger agencies, what can we recommend?
Mm-hmm. I think that level may be where it gets really tricky. What do you think, Terry?
I'd agree. It will get tricky. One of the things I can think of just off the top of my head as a quick solution to that would be, you know, each agency has an intranet. And, you know, having a component of that intranet include everything that's available within that agency. That is, it's indexed, it's searchable, it's very user-friendly. So I mean, if somebody calls and, you know, say they call the Department of Agriculture and they're interested in knowing what programs that we have that are consistent with, you know, producing corn, we can go onto our intranet and we can do a search for corn and find out that we've got pesticide type programs, we've got marketing type programs, we've got, you know, economic development type production based programs that we otherwise wouldn't have any concept of.
Right.
And I mean, and that's just speaking from, you know, my particular agency, that having been in other agencies, that it's very lacking. You might be able to find organizational charts and have an idea of what divisions your agency has, but you don't know what's done in the separate divisions, and that's very common in all agencies.
Right.
So if there's some type of centralized resource where, like I said, it's searchable and you can get, you know, if you work for DSPS and you type in child abuse, you don't only get the CPS portion of it, you get the prevention and early intervention portion of it, or whatever else they might have, that, you know, the hotlines, stuff that centers around child abuse, that not just identifying that it's happened, but how to prevent it and where to call and all that good stuff, which is in other divisions, and most CPS workers probably don't know that they're there.
Right. So I think that's a good point, that the intranet is a centralized resource, that is user-friendly and searchable, but you're right, that I think a lot of people wouldn't know to look there and know that the resource that they do have the availability of that knowledge at their fingertips. So what do we do to, I guess, press upon state agency staff to utilize these kind of searchable resources?
I haven't been in an agency yet that doesn't have at least a monthly newsletter.
Well, you now are hearing from one that doesn't.
Well, okay then.
but that's a good point. So what's interesting about DHCA is we have a Department of Policy and Public Affairs, and they will look at like news clips about what's going on around the state that maybe deals with our agency's funding and so forth, and then that gets sent to the Housing Resource Center that takes those public information line calls so that we can be up to date on what's out there in the media and be able to answer public questions really quickly. But in terms of knowing on a weekly or monthly basis the activities of our own department, that's actually something that I think would be really helpful.
A quick thought to you is that when you go out onto the internet from your desktop in the agency, you should be going straight to your intranet page.
Yeah.
And having something, you know, like a banner that goes across the top that says, you know, learn more about what's going on in your agency, or, you know, searchable database available for consumer calls, something that will immediately identify that this is a resource you can use to find this type of information. That it's quick and it's immediately identifiable. You know, somebody more creative would have to think about what that would look like, but that would be a way, because as far as I know, most employees, if not all, use the internet in the course of their jobs at some point every day. And if the first page they see is the agency's intranet page, and that's very prominent on the front of the page, that'd be one of the first ways to get out and let people know it's a resource that's available. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that we definitely need to utilize that more.
Yeah, and there are email blasts. I mean, if there's really important information that agency leadership needs to get out to every employee, they send an email blast.
And so, I guess, so okay, we've talked about training, and we're talking now about kind of within an agency, what kind of outreach, I guess, can a division have to another division, or a way we can create a way for the entire agency to learn about things within divisions. Are there any other things that we need to know, you know, need to mention in this chapter about creating some type of, you know, continual communication, both within an agency and from agency to agency? I know we talked about actually utilizing existing interagency groups. That was something that was discussed previously. And I just wondered if we have any recommendations of, like, interagency groups that currently exist that maybe we would want to see play a bigger role in connecting departments with one another.
Does TIFI still exist? The Texas Integrated Funding Initiative?
I do not know. Anyone know?
Uh-huh. That is it's a huge interagency group that might be able to be utilized for this type of purpose.
Okay. And what do they do?
Their primary focus is children's mental health and integrated funding from state agencies to impact, you know, to coordinate the services better, to impact the field of children's mental health at the consumer level.
Their website's still up, but it hasn't been updated in 2.5 years, so who knows?
Gotcha. Well, I know Sherry Hammack used to run it.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, it was an interagency group that had a lot, I mean, it was everywhere from Texas Youth Commission to the majority of the Health and Human Services agencies. Most agencies were on there in some form or fashion.
I can definitely, since I have already talked to Sherry Hammack and previously, I can ask her, you know, what's going on with that. Are there any other ones that we know are active?
I can't think of any others.
I know that in terms of what TDHCA has a member on, we have a TDHCA representation on the Aging Texas Well group, which brings a couple different groups together, on a couple of mental health groups, such as like the Mental Health Planning Advisory Committee or Commission, the Transformation Work Group. But it's true that a lot of times it's like there's a one agency that kind of is the key player, and then there's peripheral agencies for a lot of these interagency groups. So, but I think that, but you know, I don't think it's a bad idea to try to maybe think about that a little bit and see if we can come up with any groups that we want to make sure that we highlight in this chapter. So we can always come back to that. I know that on the discussion handout, in terms of initial recommendations, we've talked about dispersing resource materials. Maybe we should talk about that. I mean, is there, besides like the trainings and things that are online, are there actual materials that we can give one another as state agency to state agency that we think that maybe would be helpful, or creating a material specifically for state agency employees to learn about each other?
And this is just my opinion, but in truth, I think having actual printed materials going from agency to agency, I see that as a waste of funds, strictly because in a lot of cases, they're either going to get filed and forgotten about, thrown away as soon as they're received. I just don't see them being as effective, whereas I think having a state centralized database that's internet based would probably be the most effective use of funds, strictly because it can continuously be kept current. So there's less likelihood of out-of-date information being out there. If one employee leaves and takes all their stuff with them, the new employee has instant access to the same information. You don't have to worry about dissemination.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there and it's available and anybody can access it.
Okay, at least for this next biennium, I'm going to have a really hard time recommending anything that increases cost significantly if it doesn't create a great deal of efficiency.
So I guess that's a really good point. I mean, what we're trying to do here is increase efficiency, and so I think that both local providers as well as state agency representatives on this council can speak to that, like, about, you know, that there are several inefficiencies that deal with coordination and communication issues.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess what do we want to say for this chapter about efficiencies and streamlining our process, I guess?
I would say that the utilization of information technology and moving forward in would be the most effective, best use of our resources. Having a centralized information database.
Well, I think I'm wondering how different that database would be than the 211 system that's already in place and accessible across the state. I really don't like inventing something that already exists if there's any way around it.
Well, but if 211 requires a contract, not everything's going to really fit in that.
What do you mean requires a contract?
Well, on the information discussion handout that we've gotten, service providers are required to sign a contract with 211 agreeing to their standards before referrals can be made. As a consumer, you can only receive up to 3 phone numbers for local providers to contact. And my only concern with that, I mean, that's great, and we could probably dump a lot of the information out there from the 211 system, but if we're talking about a system that is specific for agencies to utilize,
mm-hmm.
I think their system may be too limiting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there's a way you could partner with 211 to develop some kind of materials, and 211 does make its database available to professionals and the public, and oftentimes 211 will develop resource directories. I think there's a difference between providing resource information and providing information referral and assistance. And you can't really be in the position of providing information referral and assistance without having a contract with them. But I think they would, you know, they would be willing to develop some kind of an education piece, whether it's, you know, sources of financial assistance for people with low incomes or sources of help for people with disabilities. I think maybe if you work with HHSC, Texas Information and Referral Network, that they might be able to pull something together.
What was that again? The name?
It's actually DEFWIC is the directorate through the Health and Human Services Commission, and it's an association of the state's 211 providers. And I think they call it the Texas Information and Referral Network, or TIRN.
Okay. Very interesting. Do you think that maybe that could work for agencies to learn more about each other? Like, is that something that maybe is like, if it was put in place, if there were like these, like you're talking about there's resource directories in place,
mm-hmm.
I can see that how they would actually be really helpful, not only to consumers and to local providers, but to state agency staff as well. But then I guess our issue is, how do we make sure that the state agency staff actually ever looks at it?
Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, I think even on the resource directories, there's just too many of them. We're probably in 6 or 7 different types of resource directories, and I personally like simple. I'd like to have one in front of me rather than, I guess I see 6 on my bookshelf right now, you know?
Yeah.
Make it easy, not harder.
Yeah, maybe. Well, and I don't think that you can ever take the place of those local directories, but I think what we're talking about is kind of a more general list at the state level.
Yeah.
And I don't know that anybody has done that.
Yeah, maybe a statewide directory that, I don't know. I mean, the most useful one that I have is for what I do is actually put out by one of the refineries here in town, and it's got everything for the entire
right.
state. So I can cover 10 counties in one month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but again, that's probably a local directory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
So do you think that in terms of kind of tying together the conversation we've had, that, you know, with things like a general state level directory or a educational piece within 211 or other types of utilization of information technology, that it would, are you saying, I guess what I want to know from you guys is, it would it have to be maybe like an executive director of an agency, setting a course for the agency to be more aware of those opportunities that are already out there to learn about each other? Or, I mean, what are our ways of really, I guess, guiding state agency staff to these resources that would be so helpful? Be a crazy thought. Any thoughts?
I mean, aside from what we've already talked about, I really can't think of anything. I mean, unless the agencies open up their intranets to other state agencies. I know Health and Human Services, that was something that they had talked about several years ago, opening up within the enterprise, of course, but opening up DAD's intranet with DAR's intranet and DISH's intranet and DFPS's intranet.
Okay, just that would cover a lot of people.
Yeah, it really would.
That would go a long way to improving communication just with those, because those are some of the big ones in quite a few.
Right.
And do you know what happened with that?
Well, I know that there was some work going on at the time, and guys, we're talking, you know, 3 or so years ago, that there was some work going on at the time for the agency to do that. And I believe DAD, STARS, DISHES, and HHSC themselves were on board and working towards achieving that. There was some concern with DFPS because of the nature of confidentiality for a lot of their information. But it was something that the SPS was looking at, trying to find a way to combine with.
I can ask Jonas to see if he has any, you know, being our HHSC representative.
Mm-hmm.
I can ask Jonas to see if, you know, what happened with that and maybe if we can figure out, you know, why that isn't available and how to push it, you know, or make a recommendation for that to happen, that'd be great.
Yes.
All right. I will do that.
I mean, so long as there aren't confidentiality issues with other agencies, I don't see why other pertinent agencies couldn't be included with that, like Texas Youth Commission, or, you know, that firewalls are developed to keep access to confidential information.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine what aspect of their services would be deemed confidential.
Well,
obviously they couldn't discuss any consumer information.
Right, and a lot of the conversation was over the intranet as a whole, and for some agencies, there are databases that are available on their intranet that the employees have access to. You know,
oh, I get what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah, but everything says would all be password protected anyway, and that should take, like you said, firewall and password protection takes care of those kind of things.
Right.
Right. All right, I agree with that. Okay. I think that's a great idea. I think that I can look into that more. Okay. Let's see. Do we have any other, I guess, anything we need to discuss about
state agency to state agency education or communication that we haven't yet? Are there any gaps that we haven't discussed?
I hate to say this, but personally for me, I'd really need to see this all laid out in writing before I could really decide if there was something we missed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's fine. I mean, I can write up what we have so far. I just so you guys know, I think that we haven't, and this is primarily because, you know, our focus has usually been on the end user, but there hasn't been, you know, as many ideas thrown around as there were for Chapter 8. And that could just be the way that it ends up happening for this first biennial plan, and maybe once we, you know, submit this one out and get feedback on this plan from you know, the various state agency boards and the legislature, they may have things that they come back with to us and say, but you didn't cover this. And that could be maybe the next place that we go after this first biennial plan. So, I mean, it's always a possibility that this chapter is a bit shorter and then we find out more things in the future. Yeah.
Well, it may be that what we're, you know, the ideas that have generated may be sufficient.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, too. Okay. So I will, as I said, I will look into Senate actions. I will look into any interagency groups that may be helpful for the purpose of communicating with state agencies. Are there any other staff research assignments dealing with this chapter that you guys want from me?
Can't think of any right now.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
Okay.
I have one thing after it's on assignment. I know there's been some talk about using the council's website to get some of this information out.
Yes.
I think that's a great idea, but I think we're going to have to make it a lot easier to find.
Okay.
It's pretty tricky. I mean, it doesn't have a button on it. Unless I'm just really illiterate, I can't find a button on the y'all's homepage to get to it directly. And I think if we're going to use it to actually disseminate information, it's got to be easy to get to from TDHCA's homepage.
I agree with you on that. I think that that it will take a couple of conversations with our IT department to see how we can incorporate it. Because, I mean, as you all know, maybe I haven't told you, but TDHCA has not usually had interagency councils of this nature before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that just because it hasn't existed doesn't, you know, it's kind of the reason why there hasn't been really anything set up in terms of IT, in terms of accessibility online. So I can definitely have a conversation with our IT department and see if there's a, you know, because right now what we have on our website is that there are buttons on the front page that can take you to our programs, and they can take you to our, you know, our funding sources, but they can't necessarily take you to our councils. Amy, I think that's a great idea. I think I will ask IT and look into that.
And I think your big commission is even, or council or whatever it is on the front. No, it's not even. Okay, it's your website. Oh, yeah, your board is on the front.
Right, the board, yeah, the board.
And so, I mean, if they could even add a button there, or something, it's just really hard to get to. If we're going to use it with any success, it's going to have to be a lot easier to get to.
Yeah. I agree with you, and I will see. Yeah, I will ask and see what kind of the options are. All right, I will do that. Any other staff research or any staff assignments at all? I mean, is there anything that maybe we missed in a previous conference call about another chapter? Okay, well,
Our next steps are, we have our next conference call on June 3rd, and it sounds like what I've heard from you guys is that maybe that I will draft the chapter, I'll draft chapter 7, and then that next conference call can be a follow-up to this one and saying, this is what I like, this is what I don't like about this draft chapter, or this is what I want to add. That sound like a good idea?
Sure. Yep.
Okay. So we'll make sure the chapter, or that the June 3rd call is you guys reviewing a draft chapter 7. And I think that at that point I will also have to you the other draft chapters that I mentioned at the beginning of this call. So the chapter 5, identifying barriers, the chapter on the needs assessment, and then the background chapter about the council itself. So we'll actually have multiple chapters that we can talk about at that meeting. Drafts of those chapters.
Sounds good to me.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, everyone. And as I said, as my supervisor approves them, I will be sending you out those draft chapters for further critique. And you can always submit written critiques to me if you just want to use track changes or comment boxes within the body of the draft chapter. I will always accept those, especially since I know people can't always make it to these conference calls regularly. So feel free to submit comment that way as well.
Great.
Okay. Thanks so much, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.